Welcome to the Logos of Experience and Truth podcast, where I unlock the mysteries of the beatific vision of God. This is the ancient yet ever-present path of discovering your inner freedom and unlimited potential to achieve your goals now. Check the episode description for a link to the podcast page at logosofexperienceandtruth.com, where you can navigate this episode with time-stamped show notes. Let us begin. So the two key words that I want you to focus on in both of those titles that I've given you are vision and experience. What I've always found most interesting regarding spiritual mystical writings are when the actual experiences and visions are actually spoken of. And as most people, what I've typically found most boring is when they're not spoken of or they're alluded to, but then they don't actually speak about them, when all you get is a giant wall of text of teachings. Nothing wrong with the teachings, but if somebody's alluding to the actual visions and then they don't talk about them, it always left me wanting. Now, when reading my patron saint's work, St. John of the Cross's The Ascent of Mount Carmel or The Dark Night of the Soul, I found it very frustrating that he mentions receiving visions from God versus visions from the devil. And then he never really seemed to describe them in any greater detail. He provided a poem called The Dark Night, to which The Dark Night of the Soul is literally centered around, as he breaks down each line and each stanza within it. And though the poem describes the experience at the end of it, the culmination, the finality of essentially ascending and all the detail with that, but again, still never really mentions the visions of what was seen, right? He's using poetic language to describe what was experienced. And I don't know, maybe that's how we saw it, but it didn't seem like that's what it was. It seemed like he was just using poetic language to describe what was occurring. So just so you get an idea, in case you're not familiar with it, I'm sure, you know, not everybody reads St. John of the Cross's The Ascent of Mount Carmel, The Dark Night of the Soul, or his poetry. So I'll just read it real quick. It's a very quick mystical poem, and just so you get an idea of what I'm talking about. St. John of the Cross's The Dark Night. One dark night, fired with love's urgent longings, ah, the sheer grace, I went out unseen, my house being now all stilled, in the darkness and secure, by the secret ladder, disguised, ah, the sheer grace, in darkness and concealment, my house being now all stilled. On that glad night, in secret, for no one saw me, nor did I look at anything, with no other light or guide than the one that burned in my heart. This guided me more surely than the light of noon, to where he was awaiting me, him I knew so well, there in a place where no one appeared. O guiding night, O night more lovely than the dawn, O night that has united the lover with his beloved, transforming the beloved in her lover. Upon my flowering breast, which I kept wholly for him alone, there he lay sleeping, and I caressing him, there in a breeze from the fanning cedars. When the breeze blew from the turret, as I parted his hair, it wounded my neck with its gentle hand, suspending all my senses. I abandoned and forgot myself, laying my face on my beloved. All things ceased. I went out from myself, leaving my cares, forgotten among the lilies. So as much as I resonate with the imagery in the poem, for me it's always still been the spoken visions and experiences of the great mystics that I remember the best, like Arjuna and Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, or the vision of Hermes Trismegistus, or Moses and the burning bush, and of course everything that Jesus goes through, which is all mystical language as well. So there's definitely reasons for why they're not always spoken of. I understand the reasons why. The greatest teachings, the teachings that all the mystics try and teach, are kind of like the noble truths of the Buddha, or one of them at least, in regards to no thought, or as St. John calls it in another of his little poems, understanding without understanding. What this refers to is the essential state of mind, the place where the aspirant, where one needs to reach in order to have the experience. Because what's occurring is, if I'm using more secular language, the beginning of meditation takes you through your conscious mind. When you get deeper into it, you're now delving through your subconscious mind. And even though they quote unquote say that you can't enter the unconscious mind, that's exactly what the mystical experience is. Now, that might be something that a secular person might say. Obviously, the religious mystical person, obviously anybody that's had the experience knows that there's something else there when this occurs, something else that's guiding, some other type of presence that's there. So in trying not to teach or show the visions and only speaking of the path, the way that I've seen it is that these various teachers that don't try and teach the visions are doing so because teaching the visions themselves, one will try and contemplate them, which will create more thought and create more images. And that in not speaking about them, I figure that that's why they're trying not to, or they don't want to, because it can be a stumbling block, I suppose. Because entering the kingdom of heaven, being in the kingdom of heaven, is when worldly thought ends. And you can start seeing and hearing some of that language that does occur frequently in the New Testament of dying to the world and being reborn in the kingdom of heaven. And we'll come back to that idea, this idea of the difference between worldly thought and spiritual kingdom of heaven thought, because it's very important when it comes to understanding the mystical path. Now, my stance on this, as much as I understand why the teachers in these mystical things may or may not have spoken of the visions, or may and may not have given more detail in regards to what is seen and experienced, is I find, what difference does it make to speak about them? Because regardless of whether you know it, whether you've heard it, you still have to walk the mystical path. Knowing the path is not the same as walking the path. And for me personally, I would have preferred to have had a map with more pictures on it instead of a blank page when it comes to some of this stuff. Now, obviously, as I already mentioned, there are plenty of examples of the different types of visionary type of things that are seen, but I know I would have liked a little bit more, I guess. And yet that might be why I've gone through the experiences that I've had, why I've been dragged along this narrow path that I have, and why I've been kept silent for as long as I've been kept silent. Because you may have wondered why I haven't spoken about any of these experiences when I mentioned that my first one occurred in 2001, since as I'm recording this, it's 2020. And the easiest way for me to describe that is that I needed to know what I was talking about. It's no clearer way for me to describe that. And the main reason is because the first experience that I had was a drug experience, as with most people. I just continued to delve into the idea of why I had it, where at every other time I had taken drugs, it didn't happen, as well as why some people seemed to have it and then other people didn't have it. In addition to that, I couldn't understand why there was such variation to the religions of the world, but that they all still had some sort of vision or experience rooted as the foundation. There was something that united them, but also differentiation at the same time. And because I couldn't understand this, I simply felt that I couldn't speak more about it. At the same time, I was probably heavily influenced by all the wisdom teachings in the Bible, of the Proverbs and stuff like that, and sayings like the wise speak when they know, you know, versus the fool that knows how to speak, and things of that nature. And I just felt that to speak about those experiences back then without really knowing, it simply was not in my nature to be that way, that I needed to know, I needed to understand in a greater depth before I actually opened my mouth and started talking. And so it simply took 17 years until I experienced again. And when I experienced again, it was because now I knew, and I had experienced without a single element within my body or mind. There was nothing other than entirely and pure faith. And thus, that's why I'm now ready to speak. Now, I'm not trying to be cryptic about it, so hopefully in time you'll understand what I mean by this. But another question you may have, and we're going to start diving deeper into this as we're talking more and more about the various phases that occur in the spiritual journey, is why did it take 17 years from one experience to the next? Now, I had experiences in between that, and we'll get into that a little bit more depth. But going back to the poem of the Dark Knight from John of the Cross, and the line in the first stanza, in the second stanza it was as well, "My house being now all stilled." And hopefully you understand this is what I mean by there's just not as much depth in some of the works that I've read, because that single line denotes such an intense and long period of time while you're walking along this narrow path. And yet in his poem, it only occupies a single line. It's one line in this poem regarding the Dark Knight. And that's what he calls it, the Dark Knight, because he's speaking about that finality. But for me, that line right there is possibly the most important. And it's one of the reasons why instead of the Dark Knight, I prefer to call it the Desert of the Soul, since the desert and trudging through the desert for me is simply a more apt way of describing this grinding process, stage, phase of spiritual development to my ears. So in comparison to this, if I mention one of my other most favorite works in Dante, of course, the Divine Comedy, he spends the majority of his time speaking about this one line, "My house being now all stilled," because the entirety of the Inferno and the Purgatory is how he gets to "my house being now all stilled." So when you're reading these various works, they're all taking place in different phases. And that's why sometimes it may be confusing, because depending on what phase and stage of the spiritual path you might be in, it may or may not mean something or as much for you. So again, for me, calling this the Desert of the Soul is far more concrete and precise a description. So for instance, Jesus underwent this for our sake for 40 days in the desert. Since everything Jesus does was a clear way of showing us the path, and it doesn't mean that he went through it as long as us. It's that answering that same question of, well, why did he need to be baptized? Well, it was for our sake, right? So that we could see these different steps that he takes, and that these are the different, at least for a Christian, at least for a Catholic, that these are the sacraments. These are the various sacraments that we should go through. But the clearer way of seeing this desert experience, especially in the Bible, is of course through Moses. But again, it's not spoken of other than one or two lines. He's 40 years in the desert from when he left Egypt. Now you can see this as either real, having really happened, or a symbolic language. And again, we'll get to things like that later on once I've explained some stuff to you. But it took him 40 years wandering in the desert until he came to God and the burning bush. So that desert of the soul experience, that dryness, that time period when God is grinding you and refining you and stripping you naked away, and you're being stripped naked by God. And just so that you know and understand, since I've seen some incorrect interpretations about nakedness in different esoteric type of writings, it has nothing to do with sexuality. Nakedness has to do with the stripping away of the mind, stripping away of the passions and emotions, and making oneself ready, clean, and prepared to experience the divine. Essentially, the desert of the soul can last a lifetime. Being in that spiritual phase can last a lifetime. And since we've already mentioned that there's different stages through spiritual development, I've already spoken of a couple of them. Every mystic seems to sort of lay them out kind of like a literary motif, or as I'm chuckling in my head, how back in the day, every hip-hop artist would spell out their name or had the mama song in it after Tupac did. So I'll do no different. I've already spoken on a couple of them. But what I will do to the best of my abilities is to speak about my visions and experiences within each phase, the things I saw and the things that I experience so that you understand a little bit more what those types of phases and stages actually are. In addition, I'm going to be speaking a lot about the strange phenomenon that Carl Jung called synchronicity, that apparent dissolving away of chance encounters and experiences, and how things to appear to happen because they were meant to happen, or because you'd already thought and seen, and in my case, written about it, that they were going to happen, or dreamt about it in some sort of way. Signs or prophecies, or like going to the Oracle at Delphi in ancient Greece, but that the Oracle at Delphi may have been more symbolic as well as the physical location that the Oracle is within. And we'll touch back on this later as well. And in addition, and possibly most importantly, what I will try and speak about and what I've learned within the various elements found within the visions that are the same throughout all the world, throughout all time. Now, this will be a different depth than if you've studied any of Joseph Campbell's work, since he essentially did that by taking the myths themselves and comparing them in terms of the literary aspects of them. But what I will be doing is speaking more about the visions themselves and the things that occur in the visions that confirm that you're actually having the mystical vision. And that's going to be the underlying purpose as well of all that I'm speaking about. Because if you go beyond the actual words of the prophets, the seers, the myths, the visions, and look at the actual symbolic language that's used, there's a stunning similarity and exactness to the experience of the mystic, then the seer, of those that go beyond the normal bounds of worldly thought and enter into the thought of the kingdom of heaven. There is a process. There are things that occur, and each different person that speaks about them seems to focus on something more than the other, and that's why there are some that maybe only focus on one thing versus another. But because I've experienced this, and I've been silent and meditated and patient in my understanding, I've been able to see what these various things are. And of course, we'll explore this much further in much greater detail. And that's how I will proclaim my authentic experiences with these talks. It's not just about having the ecstatic experience and feeling the union that's often spoken of. It's not just these happy, warm, fuzzy feelings that most people speak about. That can happen from getting drunk or taking some drugs. There's far greater depth and far greater things that occur when you're actually having this experience where you're essentially rended, torn apart, and rebuilt. Spiritually reborn in truth, since that's exactly what we are talking about in this. And by speaking about this greater depth that occurs within these visions from one tradition to the next, eventually when we get to that, that there's the same. They may appear different, but they all show and describe the same exact human experience of coming in contact with God. And again, the only way that I can word it is that I've seen the face of God on several occasions and thus have been able to identify the symbol that has been used to denote this experience when you've gotten to this point. And it's found within all religions present, as well as many of the ancient ones that I've at least been able to spend time researching before simply coming to understanding the truth that I had seen what I had seen and I had understood what I had understood. And that all of this, finally, when I did come to it, was my receiving an answer to a question that I had thought sometime in 2017. And it was this thought that essentially brought me back upon the narrow path and essentially began the process of removing me from what I've called the desert of the soul. So sometime in 2017, after vacationing in Hawaii, a month or so after the birth of my second daughter, Ilaria, I was becoming alarmed by how active the atheist community was towards all of the various legal challenges towards city and state locales having religious iconography upon them and their demand for its removal. Now, this is tied to the reason why I remained silent and contemplative since 2001, because I wanted to know before I spoke. And again, when we discuss that vision, hopefully you'll understand a little bit more in depth of why I remained silent and continued to meditate and contemplate what I had experienced. And this was one of the main reasons, because I didn't have an answer towards the skeptic of, well, you just had a drug experience, so how can you call that God? So that was one of the main reasons why I stayed silent about that experience. But so this was the thought. This was the thought that I had as I was reading the news about these different types of challenges that were occurring. I simply sat there and I thought to myself that there had to be a way to show the truth of this invisible world, the truth of the spirit of God in some physical way, because everywhere where there were humans, in my mind, in what I had seen, in what I had studied, there was belief, understanding, practices, devotion to some sort of unseen, all-pervading, omniscient, omnipresent power of rulership that was both within and without the human experience of life, everywhere where there were humans. And it simply stunned me that even with this sociological fact, that this fact seems to leave the minds of those that are against belief in God. And the answer that I had heard, or at least the answer that I had interpreted from these people, that basically all of our ancestors were superstitious primitive morons, essentially, was just not a satisfactory answer to me in regards to why there was belief in God, why there was this belief in the gods, if we go beyond a monotheistic type of attitude, because even back then they still had these concepts. They were still feeling this unseen unknown all around them. And I simply prayed within my mind of minds, my heart of hearts, that there had to be a way to show this beyond the forms of expressions created by the experience itself, beyond the prophetic symbolic language beneath it, the foundation of it. There had to be a way to show, and through this, possibly even prove God. And if not prove God, at least prove the experience that human beings have had of what is called the experience of God, the mystical experience. And this was the thought that began the process of removing me from the desert of the soul after being in it for 12 years or so, since I entered into it sometime at the end of 2004 to the beginning of 2005 in another experience that I'll talk about. I don't know the exact date, but considering it was about the same time when I entered the church, and it was in a marriage retreat later on in that year, I happened to have gone to a Carmelite church / monastery where I was given the works of St. John of the Cross and the Dark Night of the Soul. So I'd say again, this was about early 2005 after this experience that I had had, which I would later understand was my entrance into this spiritual phase of the desert of the soul. And yet even then, I still wouldn't realize that I was in the desert of the soul until around 2008. But 2005 was when I entered into it. So I was basically in this phase for a good 12 years. And for those that know such things, the pupil receives the teachings when they are ready for them. Of this, there is no deviation from the law of God. So let's take that a little bit deeper and say that if you've stumbled upon this recording, these talks, this podcast, either you've stumbled upon it and will quickly stumble away if you've even listened this far, or if you are listening to it, then you are probably ready to start listening to what I have to say, the visions of the teachings that I will give, for they are meant for you now. So I have given a brief introduction there. This may be one of the longest recordings just because I obviously needed to give an introduction. But as I spoke about earlier, I also want to give you one of my visions right from the start. Most importantly, just so you know what you're dealing with in what you're listening, if you decide to keep listening. And so what I will do is I will begin in medias res, in the middle. with my vision and experience that I had on March the 25th in 2018. I've already mentioned what I will now call my awakening or calling forth experience in 2001. And then I had the other experience that I've sort of mentioned, end of 2004, beginning of 2005, that tossed me into the desert of the soul that I will call the disillusion experience. And then I've had several more after March 25th, 2018. Now, when I say experiences, I'm talking actual mystical type of things, because littered in between all of this, I've had probably dozens, hundreds of synchronistic type of things, but that's not what I'm talking about in regards to actual mystical type of experience. So what I want to do is give you a flavor again of what you're going to be listening to if you continue listening to me. What I will do is describe what I will call the ascension to the temple of the Father. I will try my best not to explain anything yet unless it was something I understood at that point. Not entirely something that I came to afterwards, but something that I understood on that day, at that point, so that I can simply try and describe what I saw and experienced. Now, I'll give a little context, of course. I've already mentioned kind of back and forth, 2001, 2005, exiting it around 2017, exiting the desert of the soul, stuff like that. So when this experience occurred, it was only 4 months removed from my fully coming back onto the narrow path, since I'd fallen away. That's kind of what the desert of the soul is and can possibly do. You fall away. If you read the opening lines again of Dante, as I stated, midway through the journey of life, he's talking about that he wandered off the path and that this entire work is his coming back onto the path. So again, that's the context of where I'm at this point. I had essentially self-healed from hypothyroidism by staring at myself in the mirror and praying it away. And then this is also after the thought that I described earlier that kickstarted me into this, the beginning of the spiritual rebirth, as clearly spoken of and alluded to by Jesus in the Gospel of John. So again, this is the ascension to the temple of the Father. The day began by my awakening from a dream around 3:56 a.m. on March the 25th, 2018, writing it down for how strange it was. Now, just as a caveat here, when I give you a time, it's because I had written it into OneNote and it gives you a little timestamp. When I tell you I wrote something down and there is no timestamp, that's because I had written it in a journal in Microsoft Word. And though I have the date for it, I don't have the time. Now, also what you will find in this is I write a lot of journal writing, and I've notated years and years and years worth of these strange, spiritual, mystical types of experiences, thoughts, and feelings. As I've stated, I've been patiently notating everything in regards to this. So again, it began by awakening from a dream around 3:56 a.m. Now, you may laugh when I tell you what the dream was about, especially any Marvel fans, but I had a dream about the Watcher character from the Marvel Universe. Now, in specific, it was in reference to when, if you've ever read the comic book series of the Infinity Stones, as I'm sure many people did considering the movies, and if you remember the date that I just gave, March the 25th, I think the Infinity War movie actually came out either a couple of weeks prior to this or a couple of weeks after. I can't remember, but I know it was around the same time frame. So the dream was in specific to when Thanos notices the Watcher observing him in the opening of the Infinity Stones comic book series. And Thanos notates this because of the grandness of his achievement of having received the stones, of having gotten all the stones, and that's why the Watcher was there now. So in my dream, though, what the dream was telling me was that this Watcher character, this Watcher, was being cut off from existence and was going to be gazing at this or that endlessly, and that I needed to cut him out entirely from existence. After I saw this, I had a couple other images of seeing like a castle and a mountain, and in the dream, I saw this as some type of a signpost or a goal, that I was going where I needed to go to find truth, that I was going beyond. That was actually what I thought in the dream, and I wrote it down for some reason. I notated it in my writing as a symbol for what was occurring with me at this point, And again, that's something we'll get to later, how I got to this point, the thoughts, the meditations, the realizations leading up to this dream and to the rest of the day. Later in the day, I was contemplating the dream, and I realized that the dream was telling me I needed to break away from this watcher. And I remembered the teaching of Christ, where he said to pluck out your eye if it deceives you, and that the serpent told Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden that if they ate the fruit, their eyes would be open and they would be as God. And I was interpreting that the serpent is the symbol for the third eye, the inner awareness that stares back at us and gains a voice of its own and essentially becomes the false god, the true idol of worship that is within. The false god, Lucifer, wanting to be equal to God, and that Lucifer, Satan, and the devil are all symbols for the third eye that pretends to be God, that pretends to see God when all it's really doing and all you're really doing is seeing yourself. And that one must get past this in order to see the real God. And thus I saw the third eye as a symbol for the false or fallen one. Now, obviously, I haven't mentioned it yet, so it might do well to note now that I wrote a book that I have on my website and Amazon called Lucifer Revealed. And that prior to this mystical experience on March the 25th, 2018, as my constant meditation, the work that I produced while in the desert of the soul that I had spent 12 years in contemplating and writing about Lucifer, Satan, and the devil in a theological, allegorical novel about one of the angels of Eden finding the truth of his existence after learning the truth of his relationship to Lucifer. So these were the types of thoughts and ideas that I had intimately been contemplating for a decade. So that's why when I say that these were the thoughts I was journaling on this day, there's a whole lot of backstory to that, and obviously I will eventually get to that. Later in the day, I wrote an entire journal entry surrounding what's called the sacerdotal prayer that Jesus recites while in the Garden of Gethsemane. This had been triggered by the readings at Sunday Mass, since this was the week prior to Easter Sunday in 2018. And thus, what they do the week prior is they'll give you the entire Passion narrative on Sunday, because then the next week you'll get all the Easter stuff. But the readings at Mass were the readings from Matthew. But the one that I had thought about later on in the day was a sacerdotal prayer found in the Gospel of John. And since I had simply thought about it and wrote about it, I even wrote in my journal, you know, I just remembered this. Let me go ahead and go and reread it in full. And if I can properly describe it, after reading this prayer, it was on this day that I, quote unquote, remembered my experience in 2001. I know it's hard to understand at this point, and it's not that I had forgotten the experience. It's that in following the teachings of St. John of the Cross, I'd given up that vision, that experience that I had as the basis of my faith and belief while in the desert of the soul in pursuit of the pure, dark faith. Again, you'll understand more if you keep listening. And basically what I realized at this point was that the light that I had seen in that vision that had healed me had been Christ. And here, being led to reading this prayer, mind you, at this point, I'd pretty much stopped reading religious texts for years, and again, had only just begun again around the end of 2017. And this was the reading that I was led to read and write about, remembering this light that I'd seen in my awakening and calling forth experience that had saved me. And again, we'll go in depth into that vision later on. So what I'll do right now is I'll just read you the sacerdotal prayer. It's not too long. You may not be familiar with what it is, or at least the specifics of it, or the specifics of the words, but that this is what I read on this day. Let me go ahead and read it for you real quick. So where I'll start from is on John chapter 16, line 25. I have told you this in figures of speech. The hour is coming when I will no longer speak to you in figures, but I will tell you clearly about the Father. On that day you will ask in my name, and I do not tell you that I will ask the Father for you. For the Father himself loves you, because you have loved me, and have come to believe that I came from God. I came from the Father, and have come into the world. Now I am leaving the world, and going back to the Father. His disciples said, Now you are talking plainly, and not in any figure of speech. Now we realize that you know everything, and that you do not need to have anyone question you. Because of this, we believe that you came from God. Jesus answered them, Do you believe now? Behold, the hour is coming and has arrived when each of you will be scattered to his own home and you will leave me alone. But I am not alone because the Father is with me. I have told you this so that you might have peace in me. In the world you will have trouble, but take courage. I have conquered the world. Chapter 17. When Jesus had said this, he raised his eyes to heaven and said, Father, the hour has come. Give glory to your Son so that your Son may glorify you. Just as you gave him authority over all people, so that he may give eternal life to all you gave him. Now this is eternal life, that they should know you, the only true God, and the one whom you sent, Jesus Christ. I glorified you on earth by accomplishing the work that you gave me to do. Now glorify me, Father, with you, with the glory that I had with you before the world began. I revealed your name to those whom you gave me out of the world. They belong to you, and you gave them to me, and they have kept your word. Now they know that everything you gave me is from you, because the words you gave to me I have given to them, and they accepted them and truly understood that I came from you, and they have believed that you sent me. I pray for them. I do not pray for the world, but for the ones you have given me, because they are yours, and everything of mine is yours, and everything of yours is mine, and I have been glorified in them. And now I will no longer be in the world, but they are in the world, while I am coming to you. Holy Father, keep them in your name that you have given me, so that they may be one just as we are. When I was with them, I protected them in your name that you gave me, and I guarded them, and none of them was lost except the Son of Destruction, in order that the Scripture might be fulfilled. But now I am coming to you. I speak this in the world so that they may share my joy completely. I gave them your word, and the world hated them because they do not belong to the world any more than I belong to the world. I do not ask that you take them out of the world, but that you keep them from the evil one. They do not belong to the world any more than I belong to the world. Consecrate them in truth. Your word is truth. As you sent me into the world, so I sent them into the world. And I consecrate myself for them, so that they also may be consecrated in truth. I pray not only for them, but also for those who will believe in me through their word, so that they may all be one, as you, Father, are in me and I in you, that they also may be in us, that the world may believe that you sent me. And I have given them the glory you gave me, so that they may be one as we are one, I in them and you in me, that they may be brought to perfection as one, that the world may know that you sent me and that you love them even as you loved me. Father, they are your gift to me. I wish that where I am, they also may be with me, that they may see my glory that you gave me, because you loved me before the foundation of the world. Righteous Father, the world also does not know you, but I know you, and they know that you sent me. I made known to them your name, and I will make it known, that the love with which you loved me may be in them, and I in them. So that was the gospel that I had read, and then I had journaled about it. And what was interesting was that after reading it and writing about what I was writing about, I actually looked up the word holy and what holy actually means, because I had always thought that what holiness meant was cleanliness or right living. And it doesn't actually mean that. It means, in the way that Jesus said it, to be set apart. Just as he shows how those that are with him are set apart, called to bear fruit, those that believe in him, believing in the Father. And even after I wrote that in my journal, that exact sentence I just said, I wrote, I believe, and I felt my spirit lifted. And in a quick examination of conscience, it was like I was recalling my pains and the sins that I experienced, asked for forgiveness, typing it out. And even though it's a prayer I had done many times, it really hit me and affected me on this day. I prayed that Christ always lift me up, for I will always stumble. And that hope, true belief, I could feel had been enkindled in me after years and years, the years in the desert of the Lord rending me, grinding me, refining me in the fire over and over again, until on this day it simply felt like it had finally occurred. It had finally been achieved. And as I prayed, as in the sacerdotal prayer, I wrote, praying as I wrote, that where you are, Christ, there I pray to be as well. For in this, just as in the previous several months, again, as I'll get to, in my mind, in my heart, I had heard my master's call and had been following and had followed and prayed that as I heard the call from within again to return to the Lord, so too would I somehow be able to help others to return as well. So that was the day. This is the night. For now it was late night. All were asleep in my house, my wife, my daughters. At the time, I was an intense night hawk. Sleep prior to midnight was a distant memory for me. And this was somewhere around 2 a.m. or so. So we're now on Monday, the 26th of March, 2018. And on this night, as for the previous couple of weeks, I had been rereading the Nag Hammadi Library of Gnostic Texts. Now, regardless of what you may or may not think about them, the easiest way to describe them from my point of view are as mystical texts. They're weird, confusing, can be very symbolic, they're very secretive in their symbolism. Some of them have nothing to do with Christ or speak strangely of Christ. Yet, if you're looking at it from a mystical lens, they're very eye-opening. Now, anyways, I'd read these texts way back during my formative time, during my expansion of the mind phase, after the awakening experience. That's essentially what occurs after this first kind of eye-opening, awakening, calling forth experience, is the expansion of the mind. And the Gnostic text I'd especially read, it was Gospel of Thomas. And so at this point, I decided to start rereading them. Now, I don't remember the exact text I was reading this night, though I'm 99% certain it was the Secret Book of John, since it lays out creation and the fall of Sophia, and most importantly on this night, the world order of Yaldabaoth, who in Gnostic thought, or at least as far as scholars conceive is Gnostic thought, is the evil god of the Old Testament. And this is the reason why the Gnostic group was deemed heretical, since this contrasted with the father of Jesus Christ as the God in the Old Testament, just in case you're not familiar with these different types of things. And so I will simply say that this is both right and wrong. If you're looking at this from the lens of religion, theology, and such things, then it makes sense that this would be heretical or incorrect. But if you're looking at it mystically, which, as I've stated, in my opinion, is the correct way to interpret much of the Gnostic text, then this means far more than theology or apologetics or right thinking in terms of orthodoxy. At the same time I was reading this, or having just recently read it, or all at once, since I was reading quite a lot at this time, along with listening to dozens of audiobooks during my hour-long commute to and from work, I'd reread much of the New Testament. I'd read the Corpus Hermeticum again, reread much of Plato, along with probably a lot of other writings that I can't really recall. And so there I was reading this Gnostic text about Yaldabaoth claiming himself to be the only God and that there is no other, boastfully along with the writer of the ancient text, possibly taking a jab at this saying from the God in the Old Testament, since again, in these Gnostic texts, there are far greater gods that come before Yaldabaoth, but he does not know them. He does not know them. And again, a thought entered my mind. Why would this self-proclaimed God be ignorant of his origins and call himself God? Yaldabaoth in these texts is said to be God and no other, the maker and ruler of this world. And then in the Hermetic texts, there is reference to a craftsman or workman that fashions the world. Plato refers to the demiurge as the maker of the world and universe. Sometimes this word is in different Hermetic translations as well. Jesus refers to the prince of this world. Paul calls it the lawless ruler of this world. Sometimes referred to as good, sometimes evil, or neutral with Plato as the demiurge. But each of them were referring to some type of maker, and that this maker or prince can become the Lucifer, Satan, or the devil, as the Bible also refers to this ruler of the world, or at least the theology from the Bible in regards to Lucifer, Satan, or the devil. And then another thought entered my mind, that each of these concepts were referring to the same thing externally, that there was some type of external being or ruler of the world. And then the next thought entered. If this was referring to something in the external, since again, now I had been restudying all of these things and my little correspondence meter was back in my head of that which is within versus that which is without, what was all of this pointing to internally? When I thought this, I heard voices in my room, in my garage, in my man cave where I was reading and meditating on this. And the voices said, this time he's going to do it. And these voices were so pronounced that I actually looked away from my book as if there were people speaking behind me. And then in a rush of memory, I remembered that way back after my awakening experience, during that learning phase I mentioned of the expansion of the mind, I'd had a similar moment, but that I'd heard the opposite. I had heard in the back of my head or in my room or whatever it was, I had heard he's not ready yet. He's not understanding. And this was a memory I had not remembered since that day it had occurred around 2001 to 2002. And I looked back at the Gnostic texts I was reading, reread what I'd read, rethought what I thought. Each of these makers in these religions and religious texts were all pointing to the same external thing, and thus had to be pointing to the same thing internally as well. Again, since I'd begun remembering the strange phenomenon of the internal versus the external, or the microcosm and the macrocosm, and the ancient art of seeing that which is within without, and that which is without within. And then the idea came to me, the thought, the truth, the epiphany. I didn't even want to say it, but my intuition told me to say it. They were all referring to my ego, that which is within me, that which is the creator of the world inside of my mind, inside of each of our minds, that which thinks itself God, the inner eye. The third eye, that which was gained by eating the fruits of the knowledge of good and evil in the Garden of Eden, that which made man like the gods. I was my own devil. I was the devil, the fallen one, my ego, my personality, my memory, my inner existence. And then the immediate thought afterwards was, if I was my own devil, if my ego was the devil within, then so too was the Christ within as well. I looked up from my book, sat it down, I swiveled in my chair to the other side of my desk, closed my eyes, and began to meditate, and instantly imagery surrounding the third eye flooded my mind alongside the 10 years of contemplation over the book I'd mentioned earlier that I'd written. And the two thoughts merged into one, that this, the third eye, seeing within and calling oneself God, seeing as God, using one's imagination and calling it God, the true idol worship within, that this was and is the fall. And what does the text say in Genesis chapter 3, 5? God knows well that the moment you eat of it, your eyes will be opened and you will be like gods who know what is good and what is bad. This was and is the fall. Taking the fruit wasn't gaining consciousness, as other teachings have tried to say, like the myth of Prometheus taking fire and giving it to man. This is incorrect. Adam and Eve already had consciousness. They already spoke. They'd already named all the animals. This was a consciousness of a different order. It was the opening of this inner view, self-consciousness, but not self-consciousness of the eternal, but of the mortal, the ego, the eternal false god, and how there are those, many, who have thus taught from this taking of the fruit of the knowledge of good and evil, and taught false gods, false visions, false prophecies, and have called themselves gods or self-divine in error, since all they are referring to is their own mortal imaginative ego and calling it and themselves divine or God. I know it's hard to understand or describe, but understand that pretty much everything I've just written that I recalled and knew occurred in mere seconds. For this is how a true epiphany works. I rose up out of my body and was instantly taken up into the sky. I crossed a strange layer of cloudy fog, something I'd seen a few times prior in my other experiences. I remembered even then as I moved through it and went beyond this layer that existed. I looked out and the sky was a darkened sapphire color. Strange again, because to my conscious mind, it was 2-3 a.m., deep night, and the sky should have been black with stars. But this was a darkened sapphire and looked almost curved and dome-like. I felt a rush, and it was as if I was blasted through the sky, moving, rushing forward. When I stopped, I was standing in front of a little stone wall, not brick, but more like cinder block or cobbled stone. And in front of it stood a brilliantly bright, glowing, white, luminous body in the shape of a man. The entire day rushed through my memory in an instant as I looked at this being. Once I recognized this, so too did it recognize it as well. And within its chest, images started to swirl of my past. And I looked into it for a moment and then looked away, remembering what I'd thought regarding the third eye. And that seeing oneself as God is the forbidden fruit, is the fall. And I looked at the glowing being, which I now knew to be the representation of my ego, my fallen self, the sum totality of what I'd thought to be me, with imagination as its third eye power of creation, that which mistakes itself for its own divinity, the false God, compared to the true. And it was me, and yet it wasn't me. For I could contrast against this by looking at it, and I remembered the teaching from Christ of plucking out your eye if you would enter the kingdom of heaven. And I reached up and grabbed at my forehead and tugged. In the vision it was a bloody eye, but I had a brief moment of seeing both within the vision as well as myself seated in my chair in my room, and that I'd symbolically and physically done the same. I tossed the bloody eye aside. I looked back at the glowing being standing in front of this little tiny wall, which I now knew was literally the only thing standing before me and truth, and I said to it, "You are not God." And I instantly blasted past this glowing figure in front of this little wall, and it was as if my vantage point shifted 45 degrees vertically, and there now, somehow my not having seen it prior, even though I'd been looking at the sapphire sky, as I'd explained, even though I'd seen this wall of dark blue behind the glowing ego figure and the little wall that stood behind it, but absolutely pervading the entire skyline was white, hot, pulsating light glowing right before me. It looked like a tunnel of light with rings along its cylinder that streamed outward across the sky. Like the sun, when you try and squint and look at it, that beam of light that crosses the horizon of your looking at it. And these lines or streams were extending outward from the central cylinder that was slowly rotating with a bright, brilliant light in the center. I felt a sudden vibration alongside my head as I looked at this, both in the vision and seated in my chair. And I began to rise up, and within the cylinder of multi-ring light, was drawn into the center of the pulsating membrane of light and entered. What I saw next reminded me of lightning erupting from a storm-filled cloud. the light filling the clown from the lightning flashes, but still obscured by the cloud itself. I ascended towards this and then went into it as well. Next, I felt speed, velocity, acceleration as I blasted through what felt like a set path. It was dark and obscured with lights visible here and there. This time it felt like I was moving through the night sky and I was seeing stars come and go as I traveled through the space and the stars, but obscured, very cloudy looking, more charcoal colored black than the black of the night sky. And the lights as I saw them were more watery looking as I passed by them, more watery than solid, or static, or stationary. When this motion finally stopped, I was very confused at what I was looking at. Not that I didn't know what I was looking at, but was already trying to understand why I was looking at this. What I saw looked like a motion comic is the best way to describe it if you've ever seen a motion comic. A stationary image, but with some articulation in it. For the classically minded people, it looked like one of William Blake's art engravings, if you've ever seen those plates of engravings that he did. And I didn't think this then, but thought it a couple weeks later and then understood it further months, if not a year later. But the way it moved and looked was like what Clark Kent sees in the Man of Steel movie when he meets his father in that Genesis ship. And his father tells him the history of Krypton and that weird black moving sand stuff. This is kind of what it looked like and how it moved. And again, I'll return to this at a later time when I discuss why you see what you see. And so that's what it looked like. And what did I see? It was a child facing me with two fingers held up together inside of a columned temple in front of a set of steps and several elders all surrounding him and listening to him and a city in the background bathed in light. A very simple image that I instantly knew to be a rendition of Jesus in the temple instructing the elders. Once I recognized what I was seeing, it was like the boomerang and I began to reverse course through the dark charcoal obscurity with watery looking light, entered back into the lightning cloud, was looking again at the darkened blue sapphire expanse, went down through the weird foggy barrier, actually remembered seeing the roof of my house, and then opening my eyes, seated in my chair, at my desk, in my room. And I will end this with that, the ascension to the temple of the Father. Next time, I will explain why I call it the temple of the Father. Until then. Thank you for listening. They say a picture is worth a thousand words. I have close to 1,000 pictures at logosofexperienceandtruth.com under the vision section that show what is perceived by the human mind during a mystical experience. Every culture across the entirety of time has depicted the experience with the same foundational pattern, including science in modernity. Click the link in the episode description or search for logosofexperienceandtruth.com so you can see for yourself and confirm or refute my claims. Please share this podcast with those that are like-minded and click a like on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. Thank you again.